Greetings this afternoon in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. It is a blessing to be here. I came here by myself this weekend. That was not my original thought when this was planned. I look across this crowd. Some of us know each other well. Some of you I'm not as familiar with. You look at the subject this afternoon of parenting teenagers. I will admit to you, I have not taught on this subject for years. I have always felt a little sensitive about, okay, this is supposed to be the impossible, and we're headed for it. Hold your tongue. Get to the other side of it and see how it went. And I'm just going to tell you up front, it's like little children, we make mistakes along the way, and yet I'm here to just share with you today, it's possible. No matter what everybody says, it's possible. And it may be that I'll share a few things with you this afternoon that you don't perfectly agree with. I'm going to give you space, like Brother Dale did, to see it different. If that's, you know, there isn't just one way. And when it comes to salvation, there is one way. But on parenting, not everything is perfectly one way. So my wife and I have been married for 33 years. We have six children, five girls and one boy. The oldest is 32. The youngest is 15. She will be turning 16 here in August. And you're sitting here as a young family. We sat there too like that. When your oldest turns 13 and you have a teenager, it's sort of one of them points. Well, when the last one turns 13, it's an point. That is in my rearview mirror. And just dealing with those realities, like, okay, life keeps moving on. We have three married children, 11 grandchildren. This weekend, we'll see how it goes, but number 12 is due to arrive. We're a blessed family. I feel overwhelmed at God's goodness to us as a family. Our children are all born again. They're all in the church. They're raising godly children. I feel overwhelmed with the blessing of God. My wife and I were disciples of Brother Denny and Sister Jackie. And I'll just tell you, the things that have happened there shook us for a little bit. And yet we said, what they taught us is right. We're going to believe God. We're not going to take just what they taught us. We're going to ask the Lord to guide us and lead us. I really appreciate what Brother Leonard said about going and asking God. You know, when you get married, it's the first time you get married. You have a child, it's the first time you have a child. And you go on with firsts and firsts and firsts and firsts. We're still having firsts. And that means we don't know how. So how do I know how? I go to my Father in heaven and say, Lord, what do we do here? What do we do here? One of our daughters is currently courting. So this whole subject of courtship that I am looking at this weekend is very dear to my heart. I'll try to not get into that today. The part of me that is, I hesitate almost to get up and share because of the accountability. This is not a light matter. It's easy for me to get here and you don't get up here, you don't know me and just say things. It's another thing to live that life. And I'm keenly aware this afternoon that I won't say everything. Maybe stepping back just a little bit to the earlier section, I enjoyed the conversation afterward, and I always feel like we get up here and we preach and we share and we try to cover everything, but one person, that's difficult. So when we begin to draw from the circle, it becomes much more rounded, and several conversations and people were saying, I had, in the end, raised my hand. What were you going to say? And they'd like to hear. Maybe I should have kept my hand down. So as young parents, getting married, my wife and I both had heard firsthand the original Godly series by Brother Denny. We felt that we were taught. We had high aspirations, very spiritual-minded young people getting married, pressing into, we're going to have a godly home, and these are all right and great goals and aspirations. So our first child is born, and very zealously we put our minds to, we're going to have a godly home, we'll love the Lord. And so at about 4 or 6 weeks old, we're teaching her to lay her head down in her bed and go to sleep. I mean, Brother Denny taught us this. And she's making herself stiff and crying. I don't know if I smile today or not. And we're trying to deal with this according to what we heard. And yet, we came to face the reality that she's having bellyache. She's not rebelling. And it's called the overzealous young parents. And I don't know that I'm going to discourage you from being an overzealous young parent, but I am going to encourage you to bring some reality to it. Bring some reality to it. So at 4 and 6 weeks old, it's probably not the time to be teaching that lesson just yet anyway. We had some severe colic issues with our babies. And sometimes they learn that if they scream and cry, they'll get attention. And I don't know how to get around that. I don't have an answer, except that when they're in desperation, in pain, we as parents need to meet those needs somehow. And maybe what I will say is, if you struggle with that, you talk to me in private. I'm probably going to direct you to my wife. There are some answers to avoid the colicky baby in a number of situations. I'm not going to guarantee it 100%, and yet we've seen success. So we're overzealous, so we back up. Okay, now we're feeling bad. You know, we're applying the teaching, training, discipline route where there's actually a physical need. So we back up, and we're feeling bad. So now, naturally, the will of the child is going to start progressing forward because I can get what I'm asking for. And I'm not going to go into everything, but there is another item that we used in our child training in breaking the will that I do feel is an effective tool. I don't want to give this as replacing the rod, but it's an effective tool that works in a different way. And that's physical restraint. So with our first child at about 1 year old, there was an evening that I said, okay, you're going to need to listen. And I was sitting on the rocking chair, and I put her on my lap, here in my arm, and I just put my other hand over top and took a hold of my arm. There was plenty of room for the child, but resist, yes. Fight, yes. For 45 minutes. I mean, it looks absolutely silly that a one-year-old would think, I'm going to overcome Dad. And I'm the kind of dad, and I think there's a number of you sitting here too, that at that point, you know, I'll take whatever persecution I need. I'm not budging. I'm going to hold right there. After 45 minutes, she was so exhausted that she literally went limp and fell asleep in my arms, and I just rocked her there. Is the battle over? That one's won, but not the war. I expect that within a couple of weeks, I can't for sure remember, we had another one. This one lasted 25 minutes. A while later, we have another one. That one lasted 5 minutes. Do you see where we're going? In a very practical way, this child is learning, I'm going to listen to Dad. He's not going to be mean to me. He loves me. While I'm screaming, he's singing to me. You know what? I'm going to need to listen. Somehow at our house, our children knew that once Dad has given an answer, and I'm an analytical person, I tend to not be fast on the draw, but once Dad's given an answer, then that is how it is. I remember my son seeing someone trying to plead a case on me. It's like, you don't understand my dad. It is now over. Let's go do it. That conversation needs to happen before this. Anyway, our children learned that from little on up. Just like I told the people that encouraged me to talk that I'm going to use precious time, and that's what's happened here. Parenting teenagers. I have several scriptures here I'm going to use out of Psalms and Proverbs, a couple other places as well. But I'm going to try to do a lot of applying in a practical sense in life. When our children are little, they just aspire to mom and dad naturally. God has put that in their hearts. And you're everything. You're the smartest man around. You're the loveliest woman around. You're mom and dad. As they become adults and become teenagers, they begin to think things through, and that perspective changes. And Brother Dale touched on it some this morning, where they begin to see through who we really are. He said, you can get away with that when they're little. It doesn't work once they're teenagers. So with that mindset, let Psalm 78, I'd like to read verse 1 through 8, and then Proverbs 6, verse 20 and 21. Psalm 78, starting in verse 1, says, give ear, O my people, to my law. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. He says, I will open my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings of old, which we have heard and known, and our fathers have told us. We will not hide them from their children, showing to the generation to come the praises of the Lord and His strength and His wonderful works that He has done. For He established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which He commanded our fathers, that they should make them known to their children, that the generation to come might know them, even the children which should be born, who should rise and declare them to their children, that they might set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep His commandments, and might not be as their fathers, a stubborn and rebellious generation, a generation that set not their heart aright and whose spirit was not steadfast with God. So, parenting teenagers. In a sense, I'm going back to the same place that Brother Dale started with, passing on the baton. We have four generations here in this scriptures. Our fathers have told us. It's the fathers. It's us. We tell our children that they can tell their children. Is all in here in this scripture. So as we parent teenagers, the goal is that we're passing on the faith effectively. We are told today that yes, or we've been told all my life, that you can have a good time with your little children, but once they become teenagers, you'll face a different story. And I remember teaching for years that, okay, they naturally give us their heart when they're little, when they're young. Let's strive to keep that heart. And I still say that. Let's strive to keep that heart. Where along the way does their heart move somewhere else? If we can avoid that transition and meet their need and be there as parents, then we can keep their heart. But therein lies a bit of responsibility. And I hope to touch on that some more. Now let's go to Proverbs 6, 20 and 21. This is fairly common verse. It says, my son, keep thy father's commandment and forsake not the law of thy mother. This is instruction to sons. And I think it means children, sons and daughters. My son, keep thy father's commandment and forsake not the law of thy mother. It says, bind them continually upon thine heart and tie them about thy neck. There is a need for a home to have a father's commandment. There's a need for a home to have a mother's law. There is no direction and structure in the home without it. We need that. How else do we function? How else do we know where we're going? Little children, they're much more secure when they know where they are. They know what to expect. Clear direction is given to them. That's why teaching and training and discipline, narrowing a child to the way they should go, brings a stability and a security to, and a safety to the heart of that child. Well, teenagers, in a lot of ways, are the same way. But now, we no longer just say, well, listen to me. That's not going to work. And yet a home needs a father's commandment, clear direction. A home needs a mother's law. So, when son comes stomping into the house with dirty shoes, who normally is the one that is right there? Mom. If dad's doing it, it's because he knows mom's law. And he's going to lift it up and say, this is the way it is here. And I'd like to just say something about unity between the father's commandment and the mother's law. There needs to be a uniting together there. Our little children can feel it when mom and dad aren't together, and it tends to bring an unrest in a home. But when teenagers know mom and dad are not together, I'll just simply say it, you're in trouble. I don't care how spiritual you are. I don't care how magnificent your works are. You're in trouble. It's going to come apart. And I think if we think, we know of situations like that where things did come apart. So one of the focuses that I'm going to try to have here through this message is maintaining a healthy and a free relationship with our children within the family. Maintaining a healthy and a free relationship. So, when children are little, they give us our heart, they give us our attention, and as they grow, it is important that we foster a relationship with them, that they're open to communicate and talk, and even allowed to say what mommy and daddy do that affects them in a negative way. Now, mom and daddy are still mom and daddy. But when mommy and daddy can hear those kind of things, you're going right to the heart of your teenager. The truth is, your teenager wants to be loyal to you. They want to be loyal to us as parents. They want to. That desire is still there. They're just more involved as we think adult level as we did before. Another one I have down here is relationships take time. And this is a tough spot. Relationships take time. And I'm going to put myself on the spot here. But I think one of the biggest trip lines to preachers and missionaries losing their children is right here. We're too busy with all the ministry work and we don't have time for our children. The man that's saying the devil is angry and therefore he's destroying my children, if we don't have time, we just open the door wide open for the devil to come in and do that. It's not the devil's fault. It's my fault. Relationships take time. So when the child is little, it's sitting there at the rocking chair maybe, reading a book. Maybe it's the recliner with children in the lap, on the arm, standing behind, and daddy's reading a story. That's time. But it doesn't look that way with teenagers, does it? Now it's different things. And we as parents need to move on to different things and spend time. I have 7 points here, and I'm going to need to keep moving along. The first one is following the change from childhood to adulthood. So as our children, as little children, we interact with them. We teach them to listen. We teach them to give up their will. We teach them to surrender. We guide them the way we want them to go. And then they grow. We need to think, I'm going to move along with my children in the stage they are. Follow the change from childhood to adulthood, keeping their heart. So when they're a little baby, they're naturally giving us their heart. You remember that sweet little smile and how good it felt? You remember those coups? Now they're about 4 or 5 and they have so many questions that you're exasperated. Sometimes in spots like that we tell our children, just be quiet. Do you know what we just did? We shut them up when they're 4, 6, and 8 and they turn 14 and we want them to talk to us. I'll let you decide whether that's going to work or not. Keep their heart as they grow. Adjust with them. This is a slow and a steady process. Parenting teenagers is a slow and a steady process that starts at about 12 years old and goes through 20. In between those, there are the teen years. Allow your children to grow up. That seems like an unnecessary comment. But allow your children to grow up. Sometimes we let them grow up too fast. I have seen people put their children in places that make you gasp. Tell you what, they're growing up. Sometimes I hope they survive it. But when we hold our children back and back and back and they don't develop and they don't grow and they don't learn responsibility, we need to literally think, let them grow up. Nurture it. Push it forward. When that young boy begins to push the lawnmower, that's an important day. Let him grow up. And just so you know, I'm not going to just talk about spiritual things here today, because I think it all goes together. In fact, I think the hearts are won and lost on the other side of it from the spiritual. We're missing on the natural everyday life, and then we want to be heard spiritually, and we're not heard. Lead them in growing up. Lead them. Go ahead. Be involved. Be there. Be the one leading the way. Now children are going to vary. Some of them are going to be slipping into that seat to try to drive that tractor or that vehicle or whatever it is as soon as they can. And the next one literally needs prodded. One of our daughters had hardly driven anything when it was time to learn how to drive a vehicle. Good experience for daddy. Like, I'm sitting there saying, how did I let this slip by? Well, it's because you have, you know, how many in this stage, and somebody's just stepping up and doing it, and you don't realize that one of them is not. Well, there was a bit of learning to do. They vary. And we need to be attentive as fathers, leading them and guiding them. And I just told you what I missed. That's only one. There's a lot of them. We even miss it when we don't try, but if we're not trying and miss the whole thing, then we wonder why it fell apart. Let's go on to number 2. Teach them responsibility, which is just a step further. Colossians chapter 3, verse 22 to 25. Servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service of men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing God. And whatsoever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not unto men, knowing that of the Lord ye shall receive the reward of inheritance, for ye serve the Lord Christ. But he that doeth wrong shall receive for the wrong which he hath done, and there is no respect of persons. Teaching them responsibility. First of all, let's take a job and do it heartily. Do it as to the Lord. And there are consequences for those that don't do right. These are important principles to teach our children as they grow up, as they become come teenagers and are teenagers, that they think right about life. There is such a thing as sowing and reaping. Take a situation and talk about it. It may take some time, but talk about it. Proverbs 6, verse 6 through 11. Go to the ant, thou sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise, which have no guide, overseer, or ruler. Provideth for her meat in the summer and gathereth her food in the harvest. How long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? When wilt thou arise out of thy sleep? Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth, and thy want as an armed man. Teaching them responsibility. You know, when we teach them those little things, maybe one of the first things they do is sweep the floor or wash the dishes. Maybe it's go feed the chickens. That's down here. then grow with them. Take them to more responsibilities, more accountability. So when that boy is pushing the mower or driving the riding mower or whatever it is, and you're constantly doing it, you know, a certain day it all needs done. How's the job going to be done? Is it okay, Dad, to let him let skippers through the yard? How's that? Not really. I want to say absolutely not. Do you want him to serve the Lord Jesus that way? Slipshod, however? No. No. But we're training a lifestyle. We're teaching them a lifestyle. Be responsible. Take accountability. You take this next step up? Yes. Take accountability for that. The young man needs to learn that oil needs changed and different things needs done with this and be responsible for it. You know, it's going to quit after a while if you don't take care of it. And I'm not a maintenance man. And yet I believe in maintenance. I'm more of a carpenter than a maintenance man, but I believe in maintenance. And we learn those things. In the house, if we're washing up the floor and we just do a slipshod job of it, after a while, you know, it's sticky as you walk. Is that okay? No, that's not okay for the same reason. We are teaching and guiding them. But then with teenagers, it's important that we explain it to them. On an adult level, we allow them to talk. We allow them to interact. And sometimes, it's even okay to say, well, let's see what happens with that with some time. I'm going to allow you, let's go your way. Let's see what happens with this over time. And, I see. We're there to teach them, walk with them, lead them, guide them. We expect them to be responsible. Give them little tasks to do where they have responsibility. And with time, we increase the size of the task as they show that they are responsible. We're still the parents. You know, and sometimes I remember this conversation with my son, and I always say, you know, I have limited experience with boys. I had one shot at it. That was it. I have one son. But there was times that we would talk about something. It's him and I are going to do this project. How are we going to do it? Well, Dad has his way. He does it. Well, since son is growing up, and I'm saying 14, 16, 18 in there, you know, he has a way that he thinks. I said, well, why couldn't we do it like this? Maybe we could. Can I, as Dad at times, say, yeah, we could do it that way. Let's do it your way. Can I actually do that? Because honestly, there's times there's three different ways to do it and it'll come out the same. Now, I don't think that should be the rule. And then there's times where, okay, I tried it the way he's thinking and something didn't come out well with it. And it's okay to explain that. Or if you choose to, well, let's try this once and see how it comes out and help them discover what happens. And then don't condemn them when it doesn't work well. Make sure you're in a place where Dad gets respected. You know, Dad actually has some experience. Dad actually knew. Make a good relationship out of it. Be a good example when it's time to work and be responsible for being fulfilling and enjoyable. Be a good example ourselves of someone that takes responsibility, someone that takes a job and enjoys it, makes it enjoyable. It's not just a drag. Life can be a blessing. Being a good example that it's important that a job is well done and fully done. Go to the ant, thou sluggard. Be a willing worker and see the need to do it without being told. And this will vary between children. Some naturally will see and others won't as much. Number three, guard over their influence. Guard over their influence. So this is an important one when it comes to finding places where we lose the heart of our children somewhere between childhood and the end of teenage years. This is an important one, losing their hearts. 1 Corinthians 15:33 says, "Be not deceived, evil communications corrupt good manners." I grew up in an Amish home, and my dad was one that he trusted us to do what was right. Now, he didn't necessarily sit down and discuss the situations with us. He just trusted us. And I look back over it, and I say, some of that was not wise. We were in very difficult situations. And for Dad to just blindly trust us wasn't wise. Be not deceived. Evil communications do corrupt good manners. Psalm 119, verse 62 and 63 says, "At midnight I will rise to give thanks unto thee because of thy righteous judgments. I am a companion of all them that fear thee and of them that keep thy precepts." There's a right influence. "I'm a companion of all them that fear thee and of them that keep thy precepts." Proverbs 13:20, "He that walketh with wise men shall be wise." He that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed. Be not deceived. Evil communications corrupt good manners. Guard over their influence. Now, I do believe our children need other people outside our family. Our children do need friends. They need good friends and upbuilding friends. And it's our responsibility as parents, especially with teenagers, to begin guiding them and providing them a place that they can relate, communicate, interact, be a part of, and have good influence. Now, I'd like to just give some examples to guard over. First one that I would have mentioned here would be friends. So what kind of friends do they have? Who would they consider their closest friends? And just so you all know, I don't know if I'll get here. No, I probably won't touch this on the courtship thing. But one of the things I'll ask a young man that is coming for seeing, wanting to have a relationship with one of our daughters is, who are your closest friends? And the reason I ask that question is, it tells you where his focus and interest is. His realm of influence. It tells you who that is. And really, depending how that list looks, can majorly influence how you feel about this young man immediately. So as parents, we need to guard over who their friends are. Who are the recreational pals? I don't know if that's as relevant here as it is in Holmes County. But in Holmes County, we have a lot of family. There's a lot of cousins. There's a lot of community. Friends at work, and people often have other friends other than just church. Actually, that's normal. Have friends other than church. Who are their recreational paths? And we could take recreation and put it on a broad spectrum that the U.S. has and throw, I don't know what percent out, but a big percentage. Let's just narrow it down and what we consider good things to do as recreational things in life. Who are those people? Who are those people? What does that look like? Church youth. I have in parentheses here, youth group. I don't know what your influences are here, but within the church body, we need a sensitivity as to who we're drawing together with, and is it healthy? Is it healthy? My church experience tells me that some relationships are healthy, others are not. Because we feed each other in a wrong direction. Doesn't make either one bad, but let's not begin adding and multiplying this element within the influence. So there needs to be an awareness. Influence. If those influences take a charge forward, what happens is the young heart, the teenage heart, starts gravitating towards the youth group, for example, and the parents slide back. We have watched this happen and happen and happen and happen. We know it happens. Losing their heart, guard over their influence. You can't parent teenagers when someone else has their heart. Role models. This can include cousins, aunts, uncles. And even there, you know, some of the safest places where you think you can trust and have confidence can be a detriment. It can be a stumbling block for your children. We did not take any of these lightly. And yet I'm here to tell you that I, as a father, wasn't perfect in guarding my children in the influences that would affect them in a negative way. Neighbors. This can vary greatly, but neighbors can have an influence. Co-workers. And yet it is healthy to have influence from outside our family. What I am saying is we as parents need to be, must be, involved in guiding our teenagers in those formative years of what their influence is. Keep their heart. Keep their heart. Number four, quality time. Maintaining a healthy and a free relationship in our families with our teenagers requires quality time. Relationships take time. Here I'd like to just give some practical applications, and you could go on and on and on with these. So please, I am not giving you this set of suggestions, and that's where it stops and starts. But rather, I'd like to give you a springboard that makes you think of your life and what that may look like with your family and with your children. So working together, quality time, working together can be quality time. But if you're a family that always just works and works and works and works, I'm going to encourage you to hear the rest of what I have to say, because children need a little bit more than just work. But working together, we as parents need to be pleasant for our children to work with. If it is a struggle to work with dad, it's a struggle to work with mom, and it's not enjoyable, we've just destroyed quality time in our working together. It needs to be something that they can enjoy, that we're doing together, doing projects together. Get them involved. Get them involved. Make yourself some reasonable goals and reach them together. Now, I'm a goal-oriented person, so I'm naturally going to do this. But when I do that as a father, I could have my goal and everybody could be my servant here to reach my goal. Or I can put it out there, here's what we need to do. What do you all think? Could we, you know, get everybody involved? How could we do this? And how would we make this happen? And we all go out there and we get this thing done together. And there's a sense of accomplishment. And afterwards, Dad says, you know what, children? Wow, that was really good. Thank you all for your efforts. That just really went well. You know what happens? They all enjoy it. The next job that comes up, they're looking to do that again. They're looking to do that again. In fact, they'll begin doing some of their own that way. Make note of the accomplishments and compliment the good work. It's not you did it for me. Now, there's a point that might be right to express, but we did this together. We did this together. Pull them into it. Then it can be quality time. Things like going on errands. With little children, this is a big, big deal. Daddy's going on some errands and they get to go along. Maybe Daddy's going to stop here at this certain place and we're going to get these little things with some white stuff in it. And I mean, it's a big deal. That's quality time. And you can go on and on with creative things you can do. And in that ride down the road, you can be talking, drawing them out. When they're sitting there at 6 and 8, and they're just talking, 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 and they get to 16 and 18, and they're talking, 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 talking. Parenting teenagers. Parenting teenagers. And yes, as they get older, they go on some of these errands themselves. remember my son appealing to me one time. He's like, you know, I like when you're long. It's easy to, we get more done if he goes and does this and I go over there. But I like when you're long. You know, Daddy? This is our children. We can think, well, he's old enough, he can just do it, he doesn't need me anymore. No, he wants a relationship with me. I'd like to talk about some recreation activities. And I'd like to propose that we as parents are our children's recreational pals. This takes time. This takes time. And I think this is one of the spots where we fail because of the time it takes. I've written down that simple game called memory. How many of you know what that game is? Memory. Okay. Probably you're picturing a living room floor with a whole bunch of cards turned down and you have a 3 to 6 year old children sitting there and they love memory. Our children played memory. And I could never beat. They knew the cards got used. They got marred a little bit. They had perfectly memorized which one had what mar. And it was hopeless. There was no way for me to beat. I'm supposed to be way older and way more mature. But they love playing memory. So I'm going to play memory. Right? What about chutes and ladders? And that seems like a very simple game, and there's a limit of what age children are going to play that. But now what happens in chutes and ladders? I don't know what the original developer of it was thinking. But at chutes and ladders, you go down the first row, and at the back end of the first row, you hit that spot, there's a what? A ladder. And you roll right, get the right number, you're down to the end, and about 4 up. Whew! Child loves it. You get up to the last about 3. There's some of these sooner. But in about the 3rd to the top line, there's a specific spot that nobody wants to hit. Because what happens? You go, whoo, down to the first or second row. And there's this, ugh. Now what happens with your child as they learn to win and lose just playing the game? It's not about who gets to 100. Just playing the game. They win and they lose. And I play that with them and I help them respond right. You know, if there's too much overdone glee about going up the ladder, okay, be sober. There's chutes around here too. And pew, down to the bottom. And everything's all broken apart. And, okay, that's part of life. Now we step on. We do that when they're little. At our house, a little bit older ones did things like play Settlers and Ticket to Ride and Take One, and you can go on and on and on. How about going out in the yard and playing tag? How many children just love seeing Daddy out there running around in the yard playing tag? Red Rover, Prisoner's Base. I have a hard time. I'm going to be all exhausted. Cornhole. Have you ever played volleyball with them? Softball? Croquet? Do we have time for such things? Or are we too spiritual? Can I be that frank? Are we too spiritual? How about family vacations? They can vary a good bit. A family picnic. For years there, we made it just a practice that we would annually in the summer go on a family picnic for a day, and we'd go somewhere where we could fish, and yeah, you guessed it. Dad did very little fishing. We have 5 girls. I don't have one of them. that relishes putting a worm on a hook. All but one of them enjoys fishing with Dad along. And it becomes a good memory. And we'd have a picnic outside beside the lake. But it was a day that the children looked forward to. Quality time. Go on a hike together. I can still remember as our children got older, we had teenagers and we still had younger ones. There's a few hikes that I took with the older ones that Mom and the little ones didn't go along because it was too much. They remember it and I remember it. Those things do things in your relationships one with another. Sightseeing, traveling as a family, planning a day of special events, spending an evening together. At our house, we made a good deal out of birthdays. We don't do the Christmas thing. We don't exchange gifts at Christmas. But we made an evening out of birthdays. So periodically, we would have an evening as a family. And usually it's a little bit of a special meal. I think those are healthy things as families. Quality time. Do your young men go hunting around here? Some? How many daddies go hunting? Few? Is there any dangers in how to view hunting? How do we address that? I'll just tell you, venison is a part of our diet at home. And as my son got older, I got to where I didn't go hunting anymore, and I did take it for granted, and he got married one day. And I came to the sober reality, if I expect to have venison in the house, I'm going to have to go do something about it. And I look back, and I think I failed. I should have stayed there with him. I did spend a lot of time with him in that. But what happens? If we go hunting with our sons, we get to be right there. We're involved. We're seeing what's happening. We see the experience he's having. And we get to talk about it. We'll hear his dreams. We'll hear his perspectives. And we get to guide him. Now, if he goes hunting with somebody else, that's a recreational pal that I was asking about earlier. Who is that? What kind of influence does this person have? I don't know how it is here. But back home where I come from, there are some big bucks around. It's just how it is. So we can't just act like it's not around. So what are we going to do? Let's go with them. Let's be involved. Let's be a part of it. Earn the right to speak. Don't just be an outsider lambasting. Get in there. Be involved. This is part of God's creation. I don't know how that fits here. Back home, we have no choice. If our young men are going to be involved in hunting, dads better get involved. Because there's a lot of peer pressure involved. There's a lot going on. And we fortunately have some very good processing shops around that make us some very nice stuff like you have here that is very enjoyable, and therefore it becomes a pleasant part of your family life. So I have three more to go. Number five. Teach and guide them in forming convictions. Teach and guide them in forming convictions. And I'd like to say again, if we're willing to be there in everyday life and be real parents and be involved, then we get to talk about this other and we get a listening ear. We have a relationship and we have their heart. We get a listening ear. Proverbs 4, verse 1 through 4. Hear, ye children, the instruction of a father. Attend to no understanding, for I give you good doctrine. Forsake ye not my law, for I was my father's son, tender and only beloved in the sight of my mother. He taught me also and said unto me, let thine heart retain my words and keep my commandments and live. He said, I was my father's son. He felt like a son, tender and only beloved in the sight of my mother. Do you see the connection, the relationship? But they need daddy's instructions. Children left to themselves will go astray and become foolish and destroyed by the adversary. Teenagers left to themselves will go astray. They need a father's instruction. Daddy, they need our instruction. So parents need to have convictions. We need to know what we believe. If we're wishy-washy on what we believe and what we stand for, there's no way we can effectively communicate that. But we do need to know what we believe, and we need to be able to explain what we believe. And men, I'm going to ask you to jump in the hot tub with me, and what I mean is boiling water, okay? We don't do well communicating. Most of us men do not do well communicating. We struggle to say what we really mean. God looked on us in Genesis chapter 2 and said, you know, he needs a helpmeet. And if we'll allow our wives to help us, many of them could just say, this is what you're trying to say, right? This is where you're really at, right? And if we come together in that, and our teenagers need to see that, not mom running over dad, but being his helpmeet, in effectively communicating, this is what we believe. It's line upon line and precept upon precept. Just had a conversation with a young man that stayed at our house years ago on the phone. He was recalling sitting in our devotions. He said, I cannot forget how you would just tell them from the Word of God what you believed and what you understood, and you just kept doing that. He said, and I see your children doing it. Line upon line and precept upon precept. But we have to come to grips, men, with the fact that we don't often don't do well with that. I struggle with it, saying what I really mean. It's easier to get up here and preach than to sit down with my teenagers and just freely communicate. It helps me a lot when my wife helps me. Why does that happen? I don't know, but it does. I need to do something about it. I'm not Mr. Everything. Teaching ahead, keep their heart from a baby. Start teaching them truth as a little child. For you parents that have little children, think about teenagers. Keep progressing as they grow older and teach ahead. Teach them of things to come in a reasonable way. Again, leading them where we want to go. There's things that you can explain to a 10-year-old that you cannot explain to a 6-year-old. Be aware of where your children are and take them a step at a time. And you hit 14 and 16, we're having a mature conversation. Now they have the ability to think and reason. You're trying to get them to give you feedback. And it's amazing sometimes the things they come up with. Like, wow. But you engage them, teaching ahead. Teaching them Bible doctrine and principles and apply them to life, real life situations. Life presents us with many opportunities, or did us as a family, where there's questionable things that come up. We may know about them ahead of time, so we talk about them ahead of time. We may not know about them ahead, so we talk about it afterwards. Dad needs to listen and then give clear direction. How to respond, how to think, how to feel. That can be difficult. Okay, those people profess to be Christians. We don't agree with where they are. Let's not have a critical attitude. Let's not be judgmental. Let's give space that God will decide where they are. But this is why we're at where we are. They see our example, passing on our faith to our teenagers. They see our example. The days of saying things and being able to just say are over when we're in our teens with children. They know us. They know who we are. We need to help them through the change from childhood to adulthood, advancing the conversation to an adult level and helping them think things through. Help them make practical life applications. So where is my heart? We can ask that for ourselves. We can ask that for teenagers. Where is my heart? Well, what comes out of my life is what's in my heart. It is a blessing to them to have authorities. That is a blessing. It is a blessing for teenagers to have authorities in their lives. It's a blessing for them to learn non-resistance as they relate to their authorities. It's a blessing and needful for them to respect older people. But these are things that are taught. In our day, do you know how rare it is to see teenagers respecting older people? You want to do something that's out of the box? Respect older people. People like to be different. Well, I'll give you that one. Go ahead. Do something that's out of the box, young people. Respect older people. When you guide them and teach them informing convictions about holiness, about honesty, personal purity, and some of these things, they're becoming adults. They're teenagers. Some of these things, all of a sudden, they'll see a weak area in our life. We're teaching them this principle. It's like, well, is that completely honest? Amen, Daddy. Or Mommy, whichever one fits, you know. Let's accept them as teenagers as we teach them. Teach and guide them in maintaining a clear conscience before God. Vitally important. Dress, modesty, coverings, fads. Talk about these things in your home. And don't wait till it's something that needs addressed. Teach it out ahead and guide them and prepare them for what is surely coming. We know it's here. Friends, music, entertainment, sports. I already was talking about hunting and fishing. Talk about it. Don't let it just happen. Here's a biggie. Spending money. Talk about it. Not using our money selfishly. It's God's money. There should be a kingdom focus. Working through needs and struggles. We need to be honest and clearly address needs in their lives. We need to do so with love and with patience. They need to know that we care about them. Don't just close your eyes and ignore needs. Give clear direction, what is expected. Young people need to obey their parents while living in the home. It does not work for a teenager or a young person to say, well, I want to go this other direction from where the home is going. That brings a disunity and a stir. That doesn't work. Even if they haven't developed the same convictions, they still need to do what Dad wants them to do. Their convictions are still forming and developing. We can't expect to develop convictions while disobeying Bible principles. People have struggled with this in understanding it. I have yet to see it work where someone goes their own expression as a young person and then begins to formulate good, clear Bible convictions later. It just sort of doesn't work. And we would have had a variety here where some develop convictions younger and others are older. Number six, I'm going to try to make this one real short, not because that it's unnecessary, but one-on-one talking time. One-on-one talking time. You want to keep the heart of your teenagers. Spend time just talking with them. We know in our marriages, we need time where we just talk. We just connect. We just communicate. I'm not going to lift it to the same level, but it's the same type of thing. Relationships take time. And if we're going to maintain healthy relationships, then we need one-on-one talking time. And that may be with a given parent, or it could be both parents together with a child. Make it a priority. And this is a challenge. The busier our lives are, and the more children we have, the higher the challenge. But I think it is back to the priority. If we make it a priority, then we can get it done. It can happen, like I said earlier, while we're working together. We can talk while we work. Sometimes people talk better when they work. Or go on errands, driving together. Go out for a treat or a meal, alone time to talk. Ask questions. Find out how they're doing. Encourage them to ask questions. If parents don't know the answer, then we're going to go ask God about this. We're in this thing together. Don't just pretend to know if you don't know, but let's go ask God about it. We care about our children, and we're here to help them. They need to know that. We need to be available for them if they have struggles in the night or have fears and don't have peace with God. We need to have our bedroom that it's open and available for our children. I've heard teaching that would say otherwise, and in my heart, I just can't go there. If one of our children is laying on their bed and struggling, I cannot imagine wanting them to struggle alone. The bedroom is open. Come, let's talk about it. Let's pray about it. And it looks different ways. Sometimes it isn't that big. It's just on their mind. And they can come and talk about it, and we pray about it, and 10, 15 minutes later, they go back to bed and they sleep soundly all night. What if that didn't happen? The next time it might be an hour or two. Some spiritual victories are won in the night like that, because somebody's laying on their bed and they can't sleep. Our children need to know we're here for you. We're here for you. Yes, bedrooms need some privacy. Parents' bedrooms need some privacy. At our house, we just have a simple rule. If the door is closed, you knock. That's the same for all bedrooms. If the door is closed, you knock. But our children, and our policy has been, in the night, our door is at least partway open. And when the children find the door that way, they know they walk right in, right, and tap us and wake us up. And they want to talk. To me, it's a must. It's a must. And I'm not talking about six-year-olds. I'm talking about 12, 14, 16, maybe 18 years old. And it varies. One of our children we spend more time with like this than all the rest together. They're not the same. This particular child struggled with a super-sensitive conscience. And the day came that came to rest. That came to rest. It's important that we're there to help them. You know, as parents, we should know more about what's going on in the inner feelings and struggles of our teenagers than anybody else. If our relation is what it ought to be, where they're open, they're free to talk, they're free to share, then that's how it ought to be. If it's not that way, it can be that a teenager's closed their heart. But I'm going to say, Daddy, Mommy, find out what you need to do to earn back that heart. You've lost the heart. We somehow earn back that heart. And us breaking our hearts may be the most important thing we can do. No self-justification. But love, care. There are children. We do need to address needs and struggles in their lives. Expect a change. Help them grow. But be patient. And let's not make excuses. Number 7. When do children start making their own decisions? When do children start making their own decisions? The reason I have this one is because in our community back home, this is a challenge. We seem to let children make their own decisions way too soon in our community. Numbers 32, verse 10, "And the Lord's anger was kindled the same time, and he swears, saying, surely none of the men that came up out of Egypt from 20 years old and upward shall see the land which I swear unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and unto Jacob, because they have not wholly followed me."
In Hebrew culture, a boy became a man at the age of 12, if I understand right. But he wasn't counted as an accountable man until he was 20 years old. So 12 to 20 is 13 to 19. What is the process of learning and growing between 12 and 20? And should they be left to figure it out for themselves, or should parents be there to teach them, to guide them, and help them? The worst I've heard is a large family, children at the age of 8 and 10 were given money to buy their own clothes because mom and dad somehow weren't able to meet the needs of the children. So the children went out and just bought their own things. And there was even things happened in that family where older ones would take advantage of younger ones and end up getting more money. And you look at it and not good. But what about allowing children to make their own decisions without parental guidance at 14, at 16, at 18? I would feel this is a mistake. And making all their decisions without the child's involvement until they're 21 is also a mistake. So now let's say that again. Allowing children to make their own decisions without parental guidance at 14, 16, and 18 is a mistake. Making all the child's decisions without the child's involvement until they're 21 is also a mistake. We're here to parent teenagers. We're here to guide them. A young man that is getting his own money, he's buying his own clothes. I don't know if this happens here or not, but I'm going to step out and suggest it. When it's time to go buy shirts, take mom with you. Here we go. And mom comes along and just helps him. Think about how this fits and looks and colors. I think we would more expect when it's time to go fabric shopping that the young ladies that are buying fabric, that they take mom along. But there's a need for that. Do you know that doesn't always happen? The community we come from, they go buy their own and just do. And you begin to look at it and say, well, what's happening here? Why do decisions get made the way they do? Back home in buying fabrics, and I think clothes for, especially shirts for young men, can be the same way. When you're in the store looking at it, it can throw you off as to how things actually are because it's compared with everything that's there. I've come home to a pile of fabric on the table, and you know, they like to show you everything they've gotten, and then there's like, and now this one we thought was fine in the fabric store, and we get it home and we're not so sure anymore because the comparable of all the bright stuff isn't there. So now all of a sudden it looks different when you get home. That's the reality. Do you have that happen to you? Welcome aboard. You're with us. Those mistakes are made. But then we talk about it. What are we going to do with it? Sorry. Stepped off of here. Are we going to... Oh, well, we bought it. And it varies. I've given different answers as a father. There's times that I've said, no, we shouldn't. We just shouldn't. Shouldn't make that. Use it for something different. And there's a time or so that I said, well, yeah, you could make a dress out of that, but wear it at home instead of everywhere else. We don't want to go out and give a message that is questionable. Church the same way. It's a decision process. And I'm saying this happens when mom's along or when dad's along because of you're out in the shopping realm. And there's a lot of decisions the same way. When my son went to buy his first vehicle, actually even later vehicles, he comes and says, here's what I'm looking at. What do you think? But you know what? When dad's looking at a vehicle, guess what he does? Son, I need your help. Do you see what happens? We're here to help each other. instead of just going and doing our own thing. We're raising teenagers, parenting teenagers. When they turn 20 and 21 in our area, is a known time that they make their own decisions and are on their own, is how it's called in our community. But we need to raise our children in a way that they still value our input. The parents are still the parents. Dad is still the head of the house. The authority structure in the home is still God, the son, the man, the woman, and the children. And in saying this, I'm assuming that parents are under God in a full agreement with the Bible. As homeschoolers, we like to see full oversight until our children marry. And I'm going to do something dangerous here. I have seen what I call some extreme situations where there's such a strong family structure, authority, and hold that there's no room for children to do anything other than be there in that home or get married. And something about that makes me squirm. Something about that doesn't quite feel right. It just doesn't quite feel right. And I don't have a scripture here today that I'm going to lay out and say, there it says it. But in my spirit, when I look at parenting teenagers and wanting to teach and guide our children to be contributing saints in the kingdom, then I'm not going to hold them here in my little domain. Just chew on that. I'm not going to put that here as thus says the Lord. But there is something with that that makes me squirm. And one of the stronger ones is some fine young ladies that are in their 30s. I think they were upper 30s. Don't know this real close. But dad's requirement for a young man to marry them was so high that nobody could attain it, so they stayed single all their lives. And I look at it and it's like, something is not right here. And I'm not throwing out a solution here how to deal with this as a church, but it is a real thing that faces us at times. So in conclusion, my son, keep thy father's commandment, forsake not the law of thy mother. Bind them continually upon thine heart and tie them about thy neck, that our sons may be as plants. This is Psalm 144:12. That our sons may be as plants grown up in their youth, that our daughters may be as cornerstones polished after the similitude of a palace. And then Psalm 128:3. Thy wife shall be as a fruitful vine by the side of thine house, thy children like olive plants round about thy table, flourishing, growing, being fruitful, going forward. So maybe in here I'll just share a life experience. We've gone through some very difficult things as a family. I have personally in the ministry gone through some very difficult things. In one of those times, we spent 2 years going to Akron every Sunday evening and having Bible studies with refugees, teaching them the Word of God. I was involved, some of our children were involved in teaching the children. And it was a place where we poured our energy while everything else stood still. Today, there is a refugee children Bible school in Akron that is taking place this week and next week. There's a couple families heading it up. Not our family, and yet for some reason our family is fully engaged in that work. Daddy could have sat home and pouted. Us fathers need to get involved. I need to encourage it myself. It's so easy for us to just sort of pull back and sit down and say, well, I'm tired. I'm getting old. I'm tired. Get up. Get involved. Make time for your family. Go places with them. Don't leave your children just out there on their own. Be there. Be there. It will make a difference. They need to know your heart's there. They need to know your heart's with them. They want to do things. Give them something to do. Don't just guard their influence and then sit there. Get up and be a positive influence in their lives. By the grace of God, we can do this. Amen.